4. Good afternoon. It's on? Okay. Wednesday, April 25th. It's the Joint Ways and Means Education Subcommittee. Today we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 5515, the Department of Higher Education. And before we invite up the first group to testify, I just wanted to let the committee know that, alert them, that we had a high school student, Ike McGinnis, who belatedly found out that... Where is Mr.? There you are, Mr. McGinnis. He thought he was going to be able to testify today, but since we switched, I just wanted to alert you that we have a letter from Mr. McGinnis, and we will be certain to read that. We appreciate it, and thank you very much. Okay, with that, I would like to call up Mr. What did you ask me? Yeah, I'm going to call up Mr. Thane Dutson, director of the Ag Experiment Station at OSU, Mr. Scott Reed, and Mr. Hal Solwasser. If the three of you would come up, we can begin. I'm glad to see that you're first this time.
Chair Galizio and members of the committee, I'm Hal Solwasser, director of the Oregon Forest Research Laboratory, and today I'm going to describe for you the statewide public service programs administered for all Oregonians by Oregon State University and their values and contributions to economic prosperity and quality of life in our state. The three statewides are the Ag Experiment Station, the Forest Research Lab, and Oregon Extension. They are the state's research, technology development, and outreach education agencies for all the natural resources. They are Oregon's original signature research centers that still directly contribute to Oregon's natural resource economic vitality, quality of life, and community livability. They are to Oregon's natural resources sector what ETIC is to the technology and engineering sectors of the state. And they're foundational to the state's future economy, as Michael Porter noted in the Oregon Business Summit a year ago. Natural resources create the primary identity for our state. There's a reason for the fish, trees, and wheat on the carpets in this building. Associated with these Oregon natural resources are businesses and industries that create about 20% of Oregon's economy, $24 billion in total industrial output, and directly support 155,000 jobs. They're major portions of the state's traded sector economy. These resources belong to and in Oregon. They cannot be outsourced, but they can be neglected and degraded if underfunded, unmanaged, or unconserved. Well-managed, well-invested, Oregon's natural resources sustainably deliver the foods, wood-based products, recreational experiences, and cultural connections that Oregonians depend upon and cherish. They create wealth that supports funding for vital public services such as schools, public health, and security. And the Oregon State University statewide program's sole focus is enhancing Oregon's natural resources-based economy, environmental quality, and community livability. Today and in the future, the natural resources sector in Oregon faces intense and growing market pressure from foreign producers. Maintaining competitive advantage requires continual adaptation and innovation, focused on productivity, product quality, product differentiation, marketing, and sustainability. And that's where the statewides come in. We deliver the research and technology development and extend it to users with the goal of helping them retain or gain market share. This is done at the Food Innovation Center, the Oregon Wood Innovation Center, the Oregon Fish Hatchery Research Co-op, the Watershed Research Co-op, the Center for Intensive Planted Forest Silviculture, and hundreds of other programs at extension offices and ag experiment stations throughout the state. Successful statewide programs feed the success of Oregon's natural resources sector, and our capacity for success at Oregon State University needs renewed investment if we expect a richer future for Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Solwasser.
Thank you, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. My name is Thane Dutson, and I'm the Dean of the College of Agricultural Sciences and Director of the Oregon Agricultural Experiment Station at Oregon State University, the budget of which you're hearing today. The three OSU statewide public services have as their focus economic development, environmental enhancement, and social benefits. As many Oregonians and others have learned, These are the three foundations or cornerstones of sustainability. I will continue some focus on economic and environmental benefits, as did Dean Salwasser. Dean Reed will speak to some of the social consequences of our work. As has been pointed out, we are the research and development system that supports a considerable portion of Oregon's economy. We do that in both rural and urban settings, as attested by a letter you received from Metro Councillor Park. Let me demonstrate how we contribute to Oregon's economy while we still work on balancing positive environmental benefits and providing social consequences to Oregon citizens. During your field hearings and here in Salem, you've heard from a number of constituents who've told their stories about how new businesses and business efficiencies have been created from research partnerships with the statewide. These constituents include the rapidly growing and world-renowned wine industry in Oregon, hazelnut industry, food entrepreneurs like Bob's Red Mill Bakery, seafood processors, mill operators, wood products companies, wheat farmers, and many, many more. These constituents have told you about the impacts we have on their businesses, communities, and environment. You've also heard from other state agencies and environmental groups about the value of our programs, such as the Oregon Sustainable Agriculture Resource Consortium, OSAR. We measure impacts of our programs. For example, by using a database we've established called Oregon Invest, measurement of just the agricultural research and the agricultural extension activities on the Oregon's economy shows that in 2006, our economists estimate that more than $200 million new dollars were created in Oregon's economy just for these agriculture-related research and extension programs. And that's without adding in the multiplier effect of those dollars in the economy. So that's first level. If any of you want to see that, I'll show it to you gladly. As an aside, in 2003, that amount was more than $230 million. This decline of up to $30 million in our economic consequences reflect earlier unfortunate reductions in our programs and our faculty FTE. Our projects enhance the environment, less pesticide use, reduce soil erosion, better water quality, while also creating that economic advantage. In the briefing books for each statewide agency, you have several additional examples of the consequences of our various programs that I won't elaborate here. But these briefing booklets are in your materials. In the briefing books, there's also an indication of where we would concentrate our efforts with the funds that were approved by the OSU board and forwarded on to the governor. Those are on pages 10 and 11 for the Agricultural Experiment Station, 6 and 7 for extension, and pages 2 and 3 for forestry. These areas of focus will enhance the economic, environmental, and social quality of life in Oregon in future years. We're focusing on the future. We're focusing on the new things that we think are important to Oregon's economy and social systems. Biofuels, bioproducts, sustainable agriculture, sustainable forestry, adapting to climate change, applications of emerging nanotechnologies, stable youth, families, and communities are all some of the items that are important to Oregon and items that would be addressed by the statewides by the funding that was proposed. I now want to call your attention to the chart you see on the easel over here. You also have an earlier version of that same chart in your briefing books, but the briefing book chart does not reflect the effects of the co-chair's budget. The updated chart does show the co-chair's budget numbers. When the 01-03 cuts were made, these cuts showed up, as I mentioned earlier, in reduced economic impact that took us from over $230 million contribution annually to the state's economy just for the agriculture piece down to just over $200. Another point that I'd like to make is the statewide's really don't have students and they don't have tuition. So the cuts that we take are direct, and it's difficult for us to backfill. We do bring in a lot of grants and contracts, but those grants and contracts fund specific projects, and the statewide impact projects sometimes don't get funded. Another point, I guess I'd like to just summarize the major advantages of the statewide public services. Major economic benefits, concomitant positive environmental social consequences. I'd like to point out previous reductions have already reduced our capacity, and those results are just now being seen in the impacts that we have. No tuition or other remediation cuts. Our cuts are direct and permanent, and in order to continue our contribution, programs on our FDE must be consistent with those programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cutson.
Henry? Thank you, Chair Galizio and committee members. I'm Scott Reed, and it's my true pleasure to serve as director of the Oregon State University Extension Service. Putting research-based knowledge to work characterizes the mission of OSU Extension. We do that by establishing learning relationships to citizens who utilize knowledge from the university through designed educational experiences. Extension is unique in many ways, but one of the ways is that we have people who not only work but live in communities across the state. This network that's created by that distribution of faculty requires that we listen to the pulse of our communities and your constituents who live within them. Our ability to integrate research and outreach with our statewide partners, sitting with me here today, provides a systems approach that's unrivaled. Extension faculty expand their productivity through the use of more than 20,000 volunteers statewide. These individuals are supported by Extension faculty. You know them as master gardeners, master woodland managers, family food educators, and the many 4-H youth leaders. On average, one Extension faculty member leverages their work by supporting 112 volunteers, dramatically expanding our ability to serve Oregonians. A recent survey confirmed that Extension reaches nearly one-third of Oregonians each year, an average of about 4,000 educational contacts per person on our faculty. Outcomes are important to us, and we learn from the positive impacts of our programs to replicate them across the state, and we're going to hear about some of those today, I believe. For example, a unique 4-H technology-based program for disadvantaged youth called Tech Wizards has helped improve graduation rates by 50% by those who participate and has developed a commitment in Latino youth to seek higher education. Our policy options package proposes to expand the Tech Wizards program by 400% to underserved youth in additional communities. A similar program we call Business Information and Technology in Central Oregon continues to successfully engage a wide range of youth and adults from the ever-growing Hispanic and Anglo population in that region. This program is attributed to keeping youth at risk, not only in school, but engaged successfully in education. Food security and health risks in the Extension Service are addressed through family-based education that, through better nutrition and lifestyles, reduces obesity, chronic diseases, and foodborne illness. By 2025, I'm told that Oregon is projected to rank fourth among states in the share of population age 65 and older. We seek resources to develop educational support for the Oregonian members of this so-called silver tsunami who prefer to age in place, remaining vital and in their homes as long into life as possible. Of course, our natural resource-based programs that we've heard about are made possible by OSU's strengths in agriculture, forestry, and marine sciences that leads to dollars saved or earned in natural resources enterprises and sustained productivity of landscapes, enhanced and protected by implementing state-of-the-art management practices developed by the other statewide public services. An example in Clackamas County is the annual Tree Day for private and family forest owners, where attendees report to us an average of $5,000 of contribution to their bottom line through one day of education. Extension's current capacity to deliver programs is limited by some important current holes in our program and allocation of staff of faculty in the state through county-based positions that might be restored with investments in the areas of greatest need. Some regions in Oregon are asking Extension agents formerly responsible for a single county to inefficiently spread their time over as many as six counties. At a time when Oregon is realizing dramatic population growth, the need for capacity is even more critical. By design, Extension translates the myriad of university research activities on our campus into solutions to the problems your constituents face every day. Drawing upon the research of our statewide partners, we connect people to the solutions of science. This integrated research and outreach process is one of the strongest economic drivers Oregon has. From one end of the spectrum, making agriculture and forestry become more profitable and environmentally sound, to the other end, helping people find and consume nutritious and healthful meals, what we do is make life for your constituents better. Where can we be better? Where must we be better at what we do? While there are many people, as I've reported, in our state who do participate in our educational opportunities, there are many more who don't. Many don't know we exist. Our goals for the coming biennium include continuing to do all the things we do well, but make sure that more people have access to these programs. An example in our policy options package proposes to develop a comprehensive online community education program that responds to the growing use of technology to provide solution-based education to people when and where they need it. We call this the 24/7 initiative. In a very real way, the state is our campus. We'll continue to listen to people in your communities across the state. We'll continue to form helpful partnerships with other organizations. We'll continue to establish lifelong learning relationships, bringing people the solutions they need, and then expanding access to the solutions for more people who can immediately benefit from extension programs. Thank you. We'd be happy to respond to your questions.
Thank you very much, Dean Reed. I don't know that we have much time for questions unless somebody has some absolutely burning question. Thank you all three very much, and we appreciate it. We have your written testimony. Thank you. And just to those of you that are going to testify, if you do have written testimony, that's wonderful. If you don't, that's fine. If you have written testimony, though, we will read it eventually, and it would be, I think, preferable if you wouldn't just read your written testimony, because we can read it faster than you can probably, but if you would just talk to us and hit the main points, that would be great. So next I'm going to call up Elizabeth Gonzalez, who's 4-H Washington County, and Martha Schrader, Commissioner of Clackamas County, and then following this or on deck will be Carol Whipple and Ray Jones. And I'm calling people up in pairs. Doesn't mean you're necessarily testifying on the same topic. It just means I'm just trying to do this for efficiency's sake. So, Ms. Gonzalez, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Chair Galizio and members of the committee, my name is Esteth Gonzalez, and I'm a senior at Hillsborough High School. I have been in 4-H practitioner since I was in 10th grade, and in the past several years, I have felt myself grow and mature through my participation in this program. Initially, I joined the 4-H practitioners because a counselor encouraged me to sign up for it, and I did sign up for it without knowing what I was getting myself into. I also remember that I had to decide being between 4-H Tech Wizards and staying after school for a soccer club. I really debated over the decision for a long time, but little did I know that had I chosen that after school soccer club, I would have missed out on the many great opportunities that I have been fortunate enough to experience at the 4-H Tech Wizards. Personally, going to college has never been an option for me, but rather it was something I had to do. What I would do with my life in college was where I was confused and disoriented. At the time I began the program, the only thing I was really interested in was art. And I felt this because, or at least that's what I thought my only interest was. However, my mentality has changed because of 4-H Tech Wizards. I have been introduced to many new types of technology, such as the GIS, GPS, and podcasting. More importantly, I have learned of ways that I can take those technology skills and make a career out of them. Being a first-generation student, my mother is not able to advise me about possible college majors or career options, and that is where 4-H Tech Wizards has also helped me. Currently, I am interested in pursuing a bachelor's degree in engineering, perhaps at the Honors College at Oregon State University, where I can use math, science, and technology in real-world projects. This is a concept I have picked up from 4-H Tech Wizards because I have seen through projects such as the Street Tree Inventory how technology is used in the real world, not just in a classroom. College is not only something that I have to do now. It is an experience that I am greatly looking forward to. Thank you for all the support that has been provided to the Extension Service and 4-H in the past and today as well. Also, I want to urge you to support the $15 million budget request for the 3 statewide services this year. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. You're the first tech wizard I've ever met. And I'm honored, and I'm glad you smile. So, fantastic. Thank you very much. And next, Commissioner Schroeder. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Galizio and honorable members of the committee. It's nice to see some familiar faces here today. It's a pleasure to be here. And you are just a delightful young woman. True example, I think, of how wonderful 4-H and our Extension Service works with our youth. So it's great to sit up here with you, my dear. First, I would like to thank some of the colleagues that you are sitting with today. Evidently, I have presented you with a letter signed by Senator Walker, Representative Jensen, Senator Starr, Representative Morgan, I think Senator Moore supporting OSU Extension and actually the State Board of Higher Education's recommended $50 million policy option package. So I am here to thank you for signing that document, and I've been asked to supply you with additional copies. So you do have that. With that, I just want to make some brief comments about the capacity that OSU's Extension Service brings to my own county, Clackamas County. And as you know, I'm Martha Schrader, the chair of the Clackamas County Commission this year. I have 6 specific examples. Extension brings OSU's latest research and trusted methodologies to our communities. As you know, the faculty and staff work and live in the counties they serve. They are vested in their neighbors' success. Investing funds in local faculty and staff provides opportunities to leverage an additional $500,000 annually from grants to support education and outreach in Clackamas County. Also, a healthier local economy results from Extension's involvement in agriculture and forestry. I know that the dean referred to some of the successes we've had in Clackamas County already. Family forest owners attending OSU Extension, Clackamas County's Tree School report improving their bottom line profitability by an average of more than $5,000 per landowner just by participating in the annual event. To date, Oregon makes up 16% of the nation's multi-billion dollar nursery industry, and industry representatives in the North Willamette Valley report a heavy reliance on Extension to keep them competitive in national and international markets. As many of you know, Clackamas County is number one in the nursery industry, now surpassing our colleagues in Marion County, and we have a very robust Christmas tree industry as well, and Extension certainly helps build those capacities. Young people, as we see here today, are engaged in positive educational activities. For every $225 annually invested in OSU's Extension 4-H Youth Development Program, one young person is less likely to be involved with drugs, crime, and negative community behaviors. Comparatively, the cost of youth incarceration is $72,000 annually. And again, we see a fine example of Extension work here today with our young lady next to us. Extension focuses attention on vulnerable populations while continuing to expand its reach. Extension's Oregon Food and Nutrition Program is the only organization working actively in public schools to change the behaviors of children in food, nutrition, and obesity prevention. Currently, the program is limited to serving those below the poverty level, but there is a need to expand education across all socioeconomic levels. Connections are formed between individual actions and environmental integrity. Extension Sea Grant Program educates hundreds of community members each year who work with local watershed council groups and other agencies to implement conservation programs that protect land and water from destructive pollutants and species. And finally, civic engagement of the kind Extension offers improves the quality of life of everyone in Oregon. In our county today, we have 400 adult volunteers supporting the 4-H programs by teaching and moving clubs. We have 45 master woodland manager volunteers who work with family forest owners, and we have 50 master watershed stewards working to improve water quality. And frankly, one of the reasons I'm here is because our county is moving ahead with what we call a Green Ribbon Initiative, where we are essentially looking at agriculture as one of our biggest traded sectors in the county. We work very closely with the Willamette Valley Experiment Station on ag issues. And we want to remain number one in the nursery industry and to make sure that our farm and forest lands remain profitable. And we know that Extension is a key partner in our endeavors that we are trying to push forward in Clackamas County. So thank you so much for allowing me to be here this afternoon.
Our pleasure. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And all the best to you and any persuasive powers you have with anyone in the legislature. We appreciate it. And
Chair Gleasio, I have to be honest with you. I have to get in line like everyone else.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Good
Chair,
thank
I'd like Ms. Gonzalez to stop by my office. I have a picture of Nigerian dwarf goats on my door because there's a facility in Rogue River that makes cheese with these adorable goats. I want to not only drive a little ice cream truck when I retire and have a little store, but I now I'm going to raise Nigerian dwarf goats. And your experience in 4-H and all of that will help me because I never got to do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Walker.
And I'll give you some of the cheese.
Yeah, and I didn't know we were going to talk about Nigerian dwarf goats. So I got word that Mayor Potter from Portland has to leave very soon. Would you mind terribly if he testified quickly, and then you're up next? Would that be okay? I apologize. There he is. Mr. Mayor, welcome. Mr. Chair, if I may, during the transition, I'd also like to extend my gratitude to Ms. Gonzalez for her testimony as a fellow Hillsborough High School graduate, along with Senator Starr. I'm proud to see a member of my alma mater here to testify before our committee. Thank you, Representative. Mayor Potter, welcome.
Anybody here from the University of Portland?
Okay.
Just thought I'd ask. But first of all, thank you, Chairman Gleasio, and members of the committee. We want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. For the record, my name is Tom Potter. I'm the mayor of the city of Portland. I'm here today to talk about support of funding for higher education. In particular, I'd like to address the vital role that Portland State University plays in our city. PSU is a critical part of our community. Its leaders are our leaders. Its successes are our successes. And threats to the institution are threats to the city. I know that the legislature must struggle to balance the immense competing needs for general fund dollars and lottery dollars. Today, as you accept testimony concerning higher education budgets, I wanted to offer up some of the tangible ways that the city is related to the success of Portland State University. PSU's staff is an integral part of our community, serving as leadership on school boards, on planning commissions, and even on our visioning team, just to name a few. We're proud of the caliber of the faculty that they attract, but we recognize the demands on attracting quality faculty. While Portland is a great city to live in, I know that PSU must also be competitive with its salaries and that its faculties are attracted to our community, but they also have to have adequate pay. And particularly, the City of Portland has a keen interest in capital investment in Lincoln Hall and PSU's Science Building. This investment would create laboratory space that would maintain PSU's significant contribution in research, stimulating much-needed growth in the private sector and entrepreneurship locally and statewide. Moreover, PSU students are also critical members of our community, hard at work becoming Oregon's next generation of employees and leaders. Our city's economic future is more dependent than ever on graduates with higher education degrees. I understand that business leaders rely upon PSU graduates to maintain industry competitiveness. When I speak with businesses, they tell me that their employees are interested in the state of higher education in our city. They tell me that the quality of our institutions of higher learning affect their decisions on where and whether to relocate. They tell me that it's vital for their recruiting efforts. Oregon State University and the University of Oregon have joined Portland State with campuses in our city. We're excited about these universities and their presence because we know that their programs and students will make our city a better place to live for everyone. For example, the University of Oregon has been involved in the redevelopment of our Old Town Chinatown district, and it is now one of the most booming areas in the city. The budget decisions you make about the Oregon University system affects the city in a profound way. I'm proud of the accomplishments of our universities and colleges in Portland. As you consider their budgets and the budgets of the entire university system and other institutions of higher education, please take into account the tremendous impact that their success has on our communities. It's appropriate that today, City Hall Day on the Capitol, Portland highlights just how important our universities are to our city. Again, I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mayor Potter. We appreciate you coming by and testifying in support of higher education. Again, I don't know that we have any time for questions.
You've all been to Lincoln Hall, Mr. Chair.
Yes, we were there.
If I could, Mr. Chair, just a comment. Mayor Potter, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. I think that your schedule must look much worse than ours look at this point in time. But as a rural legislator, I just want to talk about how important the university system is from the perspective of rural folks, too. My daughter is a Portland State University graduate, and she got an incredibly great education there. She graduated with a business degree that served her well, and enjoyed also living in the city of Portland and taking part in that cultural opportunity. So I think that there is a very great recognition all across the state, no matter whether you're from a rural area or an urban area or geographically what part of the state you come from, that the system of the whole as a whole is a huge asset to the state of Oregon, and without all the parts of it, it isn't nearly what it needs to be. So I really salute you for coming here and talking to us today and just helping us realize that there are different pieces of this that go up to make the whole thing.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, folks, for letting me come in.
I think Senator Devlin had two questions for you.
Yes, not too complex of ones. I just wanted to give recognition also, Mr. Chairman, Mayor Potter, of the direct contribution that the City of Portland has made in financial contribution to the PCAT building and the clear potential we have with the moving of the state's archive records to that building in the future, and what the potential is both for that, for the benefit to the City of Portland, and also the benefit to students at that institution.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, folks, very much.
Thank you, Mayor Potter. Appreciate it. Okay, I'd like to now call up Carol Whipple and Ray Jones, and I much appreciate you deferring to the mayor.
Certainly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chair Galizio, members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm Carol Whipple, the majority owner and manager of the Rocking Sea Ranch in Elkton, Oregon. With an Oregon State University undergraduate degree in farm crops and a Colorado State University graduate degree in ruminant nutrition, I returned home straight from academia to our family operation in 1972 and have resided there since. For 28 years, my professional life included primarily growing forage for livestock as well as some forest management. Since the year 2000, however, my business focus has been devoted solely to forest management as our operation prepares for an economic future tied to trees. I speak to you today with 35 years of experience in a natural resource-based business in this state. I can report to you that a strong tie to Oregon State University research and extension in both agriculture and timber has contributed to the Rocking Sea Ranch being what it is today. And what it is today is an operation that is alive and well. While being alive and well, we are facing what at times feels like almost overwhelming complexities. Anything less than the opportunity to have access to the knowledge of the current state of best practices of forest management for our region will have us falling behind in a time of global competitiveness. As a private landowner being asked to comment on the future importance of research and extension to the economic viability of our business, I can unequivocally
state that 35 years of our company's history shows that contributions from work at Oregon State University have been core to our ability to stay competitive and profitable. I need Oregon State University to continue the research in my backyard, as a company like ours makes the long-term commitment to be in the forest business as a responsible steward of an incredibly precious resource. I would also ask you to consider that the knowledge base we need as forest landowners is more than the traditional sciences of forest resources. Those building blocks of soil, water, genetics, physiology, and all the other physical systems of a healthy forest, meaning ongoing research efforts so expertly provided by the university. We also need the presence of the entire spectrum of expertise in the College of Forestry as we continue the ongoing dialogue around the forest policy issues so critical to all of us at a local, state, national, and international level. Today you can find someone from the Rocking Sea Ranch serving as a member on a variety of forest policy-related committees. The topics at the various tables where we must work voluntarily and collaboratively include such things as carbon sequestration, cap and trade, ecosystem services, and others. These are issues far beyond the sphere of influence of the Rocking Sea Ranch, yet they may well direct our destiny. Critical to the choices we make as to where to serve our time and efforts includes the presence of the College of Forestry as a partner at the table. Theirs is a voice like no other. Thank you for your consideration in securing funding for this institution that is an essential element of our shared commitment to a bright, competitive, sustainable future in the natural resources arena. Securing the full $15 million matters to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Thank you for making that connection. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Chairman Galizio, and thank you to the committee for the ability to be here today to talk to something that I have some passion about. I wanted to talk about a couple of main points today, and obviously I'm here to endorse.
Excuse me, Mr. Jones. I'm sorry, even though I said your name, I need you to identify yourself for the record.
Okay. I'm Ray Jones. I'm Vice President of Resources for Roseburg Forest Products, and a quick intro of Roseburg Forest Products, just so you know who we are and where I'm coming from, and I give testimony today. Our company makes about every forest product that you could go to Home Depot and want to buy, for example. And we also own and manage our own private timberlands, a pretty substantial land base that we're responsible for. And we employ about 3,500 folks in Southwest Oregon. The first thing I wanted to talk about today is the need for higher education and workforce readiness. And that is a big, big deal for our industry. There may be other businesses like this out there, but in our forest products business, at Roseburg Forest Products in particular, 40% of our workforce is over the age of 50. If you sample the federal agencies, BLM and Forest Service, those federal land managers, you'll find the same thing. We're alarmed by that, because we not only see the need and demand for trained professionals in resource management today, but that's going to accelerate. So this is no time to cut back on higher education budgets. If you look at the schools that offer resource education, if you look at the schools that offer forest products education, and civil engineering, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, because the technology is changing so quickly in our business, and the only school that really offers premier accredited programs in the Northwest is Oregon State. And so we're a big endorser of the budget because of the academic disciplines that they offer to our sector. It's just vital. It's a lifeline to us. The second thing I wanted to talk about briefly is the Forest Products Laboratory and how that impacts us. As was mentioned earlier before, our forest sector represents about $13 billion of Oregon's economy and about 85,000 direct jobs. We're still number two in the economy in the state of Oregon. I don't think that's changed unless there's new statistics out there. But that's a representation, a great cross-section of small, medium, and large-sized businesses that are not only competing geographically in the Northwest, but we're competing globally.
And as Carol mentioned, in order to compete globally, whether you're a tree grower or a manufacturer of products, you have to be on the cutting edge of technology that's available. And Oregon State's been a great partner through the Forest Products and Forest Research Lab for us and all the other companies that could sit up here today and testify. They've been a wonderful partner in exploring the latest technology in manufacturing and in tree growing. Without that, we have lost a vital lifeline for competitiveness globally. Carol mentioned the need for the Forest Research Lab in the policy arena. Every day you can pick up a newspaper and you can read about some portion of forest policy that gets debated around the state. And Oregon State has been a great engager in new science and new research to get at the tough questions that get asked every day. And I guess my challenge is, don't we have a social responsibility, not only in the forest product sector, but just as an Oregonian, to try to get at the best science, the best peer-reviewed science, to make decisions instead of defaulting to political solutions all the time? Why not be armed with science and then make the right political decision? Summarizing up my testimony here real quick, because I know we're limited on time. I don't think the state at this time can afford to reduce its investment in higher education. It's important for workforce preparation and readiness in our sector. We are an important part of the economy. We can't slack off on our investment in science and technology. I mean, who would have thought that the forest products business, speaking of technology, would actually be using robots in their production facilities? Our company will have 12 over the next 2 years. I would have never thought 10 years ago that we'd be employing that type of technology in wood products manufacturing. That will continue to increase over time. So it takes a lot higher skill level than 20 years ago to be in this business. So to be sharp and to have the workforce that can compete in today's global economy, we need OSU. We need the higher education. We need the research. And we need the laboratories. Thank you for letting me testify today, Chairman Lozier and committee.
Thank you both very much. Great testimony, Representative Morgan.
Thank you very much. And before these individuals leave the table, I'd like to just say a couple of things to the committee. Both of these people represent very successful resource-based businesses that are down in my area of the world. And both of these people represent organizations that are woven into the culture and the life and the society down in that region. And both of these organizations have made incredible investments in education down in our region. The Whipple family is one of the families that helped establish Umpqua Community College, our local community college. They have an incredible bequest to the organization that will be ongoing for many, many years. And for that, I think that Carol has for years been very, very involved in educational opportunities in our region, and you deserve a profound pat on the back for the contribution that you've made in that direction. Rosemary Forest Products is a family-held company. It's owned by the Ford family down in Douglas County. The Ford family has a long history of investing in education. They have, for a long time, put their children's employees through college. They have a solid program of making sure that children that are the first members of their family to go to college get the support they need to get through the system. My children have had summer jobs working in their mills to earn money to go to college. They have a very robust program of hiring graduating seniors to come in and work over the summer with them. The Ford Family Foundation is a groundbreaking organization in the state that deals with accessibility and opportunity for young people, and is a granting entity for a lot of leading cutting-edge opportunities and developing new ways to get people involved in education and get them to complete their education. It's because of these people's ability to have a successful business. They're not only huge employers in our region, but their commitment to education and their commitment to the future, their commitment to workforce development and the quality of life in the region is directly attributable to the ability that they have had to run successful businesses. And the funding, the research that takes place that benefits them in the forest research, the forestry research and the products research sides of things are incredibly important pieces of what allows their business to go forward successfully so that they can continue with these philanthropic endeavors that are so important to the area. So I just was trying to give you a picture of the richness and the complexity of this and how the research is essentially ETIC for natural resources, that it's the way that we look forward and provide those opportunities to diversify and do things better so that we can continue to be operational and to create wealth and to use that wealth to do good things.
Thank you very much, Representative. And thank you to both of you for coming here today and testifying. I'd like to call up David Edelsheim and Manuel Silveira, and then on deck, Bill Wyatt and Steve Pawlowski. How do you pronounce your last name?
Pawlowski.
Pawlowski. I knew that.
Actually, you were closer than most people.
Really? That's embarrassing. Mr. Edelsheim.
Chair Galizio and committee members, thanks for letting me come today, and thank you for the privilege of allowing me to testify before you at Portland State earlier. I've gained amazing insight into how much patience you all must have to listen to all the testimony you must hear over the course of a legislative session. I will no longer think of legislators as people that are scamming our money. If you were paid by the hour, I can't imagine that you would make it even to minimum wage.
We actually calculated that, Mr. Chair. My husband did the first year I was in the legislature. It was less than 50 cents an hour, which is what I made as a babysitter in the 1970s.
And that doesn't count any, that leaves nothing for inflation even, does it?
No.
Yeah.
Right, and 4:30 is overtime, and we've got a lot of people, so I'm getting a little concerned. So
we do need to.
Yes.
Luckily, I wanna something up this time, and won't read it to you following your instruction. I just want to mention two things. One, the wine industry profits incredibly from two of the statewide public service programs, the Experiment Station and the Extension Service. Buried within the governor's budget proposal to you was a very obscure little section that talked about the Oregon State University Wine Institute. This is a proposal that is on the table to create for the first time a coordinating institute at OSU that would bring together research in grapes and wine and the business of growing grapes and making wine. Why would this be important? Well, for starters, right now, we don't have an ability to work on all those things together. They're separated into different departments of the School of Ag Sciences and a range of the other potential health, particularly in business, are scattered around the OSU campus. Second of all, there's a real need for creation of a new mechanism to ensure that the wine industry and the OSU researchers that are working on problems that are specific to Oregon's wine industry have a better means of communication. So over the last several years, we've worked with the College of Ag Sciences and OSU generally to set up this new paradigm for how research and extension in these areas should be carried out. And that's pretty much my very fine graphic that is on the last page of the handout here, which I worked extensively on today and have received quite a bit of criticism about. This institute is supported by three legs. Oregon State College of Ag Sciences is committing four positions that it currently has to in viticulture, two in enology, to be moved to this institute. in Oregon, wine industry is in the middle of a $2 million blood drive to raise the money to hire and fund the director of this institute for 5 years, together with an assistant and certain program and operational expenses. We found that this was extremely important, one, to provide the communication between the industry and this institute, and two, to be able to find somebody to lead this institute that's much more an entrepreneur, somebody out of business, not just out of academia, actually somebody who combines the two. The third leg is the leg that we're here to talk to you about today, the state of Oregon. We'd always hoped that this would be a three-way proposition, that the state of Oregon would be able to fund some positions, what had come out of the College of Ag Sciences, OSU, and from the chancellor was 5.5 FTEs that would go into this institute and allow us to really claim that for the first time there was an institute working on grapes and wine that also studied the business aspect, because we don't have a position for that at this point. So the question mark really is what is left to you. Obviously, I've heard both at PSU and here, and even at some of the other meetings that I've attended, the incredible array of information that you receive. I have no idea how you can process all of these disparate requests and come up with an appropriation that is fair to everybody, and I clearly leave it to you to figure out what the appropriate amount for the Oregon State University Wine Institute ought to be. Hopefully the zero that it currently stands at is not the one that you would provide. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adelsheim. And I'm sure that that graphic becomes more significant after a couple of glasses of Adelsheim wine.
Well, I didn't put the stamp of Pinot Noir, right?
Okay.
By the way, I didn't introduce myself. I'm Dave Adelsheim from Adelsheim Vineyard and the Oregon Wine Board.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Manuel Silvera. I am Vice President of Agricultural Services at NOPAT Foods. We're a major food processor and grower-owned cooperative in the Willamette Valley. And I am here to testify for the need for additional funding through the Senate Bill 5515 for the statewides. You have my testimony in writing, so I'll try not to read all this. But the Oregon Agricultural Experiment Station and the Extension Service are absolutely critical to NOPAC, have been, and I think will continue to be in the future. We've worked with them over the years. I've been in the food processing business here in Oregon since 1979, and I cannot remember a year when the Extension Service and the Experiment Station were a part of what we do, whether solving current problems or help us into the future. I want to give you an example of how the Extension Service has helped us currently. About 3 years ago, our growers decided that they would like to implement a cooperative-wide stewardship program, including many elements of what we now call sustainable agriculture. But we did not have the expertise in-house to develop this kind of a program, so we contacted our vegetable extension agent, Dr. Dan McGrath, who we knew we had such expertise. He was also very busy, but you know, we've got to have our work done. Together with Dan McGrath and the Food Alliance, our growers were able to develop a stewardship program. Currently, that program is fully implemented at about 25% of the NOPAC member farms, with the goal of full implementation within 2 years. It's a rigorous program insisted on by Dr. McGrath and our growers to some extent. The growers it's a rigorous program, and it requires the growers to evaluate their operation in writing against those written standards. It includes soil and water conservation, integrated pest management, safe and fair working conditions, and wildlife habitat conservation. The final step is a visit to the farm by a third-party auditor who will spend up to 5 hours on the farm to verify that the growers comply with the program. Not every grower will comply the first time through, because it is rigorous, but eventually they will make changes to the program on their farm and will pass. With the help and guidance of the Extension Service, and I really do believe that, NOPAC's stewardship program has helped us meet and really exceed current demands of the marketplace, and I've been told that by many of our customers that were ahead of the game. So I recommend that you approve the State Board of Higher Education recommended $15 million policy option package. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Silvera. Appreciate it. Very good. Thank you. Bill Wyatt, Steve Pawlowski. Is Mr. Wyatt here? Perhaps not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next will be the student panel, and there are 9 students. So, students, you're going to show us how to be concise, articulate, and powerful, because we have 9 of you.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Pawlowski. I am a Intel Senior Fellow and the Chief Technology Officer for the Digital Enterprise Group. I run a 1,000-person organization, and our responsibility is to design the next generation products for Intel's PC architectures. The majority of those individuals do live in Oregon, and for the last 15 years, most of the PCs that you purchased on the shelf have been designed and developed by Oregon engineers. The importance of higher education to Intel is now more critical than ever. We hire the best of the best, and it's an extremely competitive environment. For example, the next generation processor that we're developing today we need to lock down next year so we can ship it in 2012. It's a long development cycle. We have to be good engineers as well as good prognosticators. So we need to look for the best and the brightest and the most creative. What we typically look for are the key researchers in the field, regardless of what university they're at, because the best researchers bring in the best students, and it improves our ability to hire the best students. As you heard earlier, it's easier for us to be able to get engineers from Oregon to stay in Oregon. Once you bring them from out of the state, they may come for a couple of years, but because of other circumstances like extended family issues and whatnot, it's very hard to keep them. Keeping them in Oregon is essential. A couple of statistics before I actually get into some of the issues with ETIC. Intel in 2005, Portland State and Oregon State actually held pretty good positions in terms of the number of recent college grads, the schools that supplied recent college grads to our corporation. Portland State was number 3 on the list, and Oregon State was number 6, and that includes both all three bachelor's, master's, and PhDs. However, over the last 6 years, in Oregon, of the number of bachelor's degrees that we've hired, only 22% have come from Oregon universities. Master's degrees decreased down to 12%, and then PhDs are down to less than 2%. And a number I believe you all have heard before, in 2005, out of the 450 PhDs that we've hired, 6 were from Oregon University. So it's extremely critical for Intel to keep refreshing our pipeline, and it's extremely important for us to support organizations like ETIC, where we can continue to look to higher education to provide the students and the resources necessary to design the next generation products to stay competitive. Now, ETIC as an organization has several goals. We'll talk about a couple of them in a minute, but one that I think gets missed is the engineering pipeline needs to be refreshed continually, and that means reaching down into the middle schools and the high schools and get them excited about technology, especially young females, and get them interested in wanting to follow a technology career and potentially continue that technology career in the state. One thing I forgot to mention is I'm an Oregonian from day one. I was born in Medford, graduated from Medford High School, got 2 bachelor's degrees from Oregon Institute of Technology, and then a master's degree from the Oregon Graduate Institute. And my wife will never let me leave the state. She's told me that several times. So one thing I would like to do is I would like to, one of the the K-12 programs that we support are the Oregon Robotics and Tournament Outreach Program. And thanks to the volunteers and the efforts of this program, we have the largest program within the nation and 5th within the world. Recently, our top team, the Pig Mice team, went to Atlanta to compete in the Atlanta World Festival, and all 50 states and 22 countries, they took the top honor. They actually were the champions. And I'd like to introduce 2 of those students from the middle school, Keegan Livermore from Winter Haven School in Portland, and Olivia Bowles from the Da Vinci Middle School in Portland, and congratulate them for their effort at 2 of the 6. Now, over the last 10 years of ETIC's existence, one of the big focuses has been, if you want the best professors, you've got to put money out there to bring the best professors in and have the best facilities. And ETIC's done a pretty good job. ETIC and the universities have done a pretty good job of bringing in some very high-quality, highly capable faculty talent. I'd like to introduce, again, six students, three from Oregon State and three from Portland State, who represent some of the best that are coming from the efforts that the universities, ETIC, and the state legislature has done in terms of funding this program. First, a man after my own heart is James Ayers. He's a PhD student from Oregon State. He actually is a recipient of an Intel Fellowship, which is $40,000 per year to sponsor his research. And he's working on a program to extract energy from radio waves, to extract power from radio waves. My BlackBerry went dead today. I kind of hoped he actually had a working prototype, and I could have been a little better off. Ellen Porter from Gilchrist, Oregon. She is a recipient of one of the Ford Family Foundation scholarships, and she is a freshman. This is her first year as a computer science student, and she is proudly displaying, I believe, one of her tech bots, a robot that she's actually building, which is part of the OSU program. And then Janie Scharnberg, she is a graduate, recently hired by HP. She is a member of the team, the OSU-SAE Baja team that won the World Series championship last year, and I think she's going to hold up a cup so you can all see how proud she is. From Portland State, Michael Smith, he actually is from Burlington, Vermont. He's a senior in mechanical engineering, and he's performing research on analyzing wind power. There's Justin Stenkamp from Enterprise, Oregon, who's also a senior in mechanical engineering and is also employed with the Army Corps of Engineers. And then Noel Tavon from Paris, France, who's a senior in mechanical engineering as well, focusing on microscale fluid and thermal sciences. So, ETIC has two major goals. Number one is to double the number of graduates that the Oregon University system pulls out in the technology fields. And as you've heard today, technology can have a wide variety of definitions. And also to improve the status of our two leading universities, improve the quality of programs at Portland State, and to vault Oregon State into the top 25 of rated institutions that is shown by U.S. News and World Report. So we have our base budget. And the base budget is really geared to support the 2X goal. We do fund programs in some of the regional universities. I would contend that Oregon Tech is a regional university, even though it does have a technology focus. But the number of students that I went to school with who were first-time students in their whole family, a university like that, it's very difficult to get into one of the major universities, but the regional universities give them the opportunity and still provide the capability to have a technology background, and then they can transfer to the major universities to get their master's or their PhDs. One thing I will, before I actually ran the Digital Enterprise Group, I did run microprocessor research, and out of the probably 50-plus graduates, 90% were PhDs or master's hires. So that's really been the focus that we've been trying to go through, as I've pointed out before. The second goal to increase the...
Mr. Pulaski, if you can...
Yeah, I'm almost done. Sorry. So the second goal was to increase the Portland State and Oregon State into the top 25. And that was a $34 million budget that we came to as an organization that we felt we needed to do to meet our goals of doubling within a five-year program. That was submitted to the Higher Education Board. Government cut it to $17 million. And then right now we're talking about the $7 million that's been suggested by the Ways and Means Committee. By taking that extra $10 million cut, of course we all wanted the 34, but by taking the extra $10 million, we're roughly going to be pushing out private funding. Private funding roughly matches state funding, $2 to every dollar. So we're going to roughly push out private funding by about $16 million. Our goal of pushing the number of graduates by 2X, we believe, is going to push out to 5 years. And our goal of increasing the external research funding, which is a key component of this, we think will be extended indefinitely. So we strongly request that for the extra $10 million in investment here, we'll see an additional $25 million in investment that we'll see from external sources, government as well as private. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and greatly appreciate it. Oh, we have Mr. Wyatt. Good. And I have a message to the students that all stood up. Please don't leave Oregon. That's my message to all of you. So thank you very much for your testimony. And Mr. Wyatt, I called your name. And then following Mr. Wyatt, we have Zach Wilmarth and Drew
Is it Bramer?
Bramer.
Bramer? And Mike Olson will be following. So, good afternoon, Mr. Wyatt. We're really pressed for time. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. Okay. I'm Bill Wyatt, Executive Director of the Port of Portland, 121 Northwest Everett Street, Portland, Oregon. Good to see all of you. And I'm here pleading a case on behalf of the Oregon Solutions Program, which is located at Portland State University. And let me just first say I greatly appreciate this opportunity, and I know you have many pleaders and not enough money, such is the game, and so I respect the challenge and the pressure you're under. I am very familiar with the Oregon Solutions Program because during my time in the governor's office, many years ago, we developed something very similar to this expressly for the purpose of helping communities come together around really challenging, divisive problems that no one else had really been very successful at addressing. And one thing led to another, and this program is now currently housed at Portland State University. Roll the clock forward. I find myself at the Port of Portland faced with the challenge of trying to build support for deepening the Columbia River Navigation Challenge channel, and find that there is a tremendous amount of opposition in the lower Columbia River for lots of historical reasons that are not particularly significant for this hearing, but important because no one over the course of the 100 years of this navigation channel had ever really figured a way or managed to bring parties together. And so working with Mr. Wolf and the parties in the lower Columbia, Astoria, Washington side as well, developed something called the Lower Columbia Solutions Group, which is proven to be a very successful effort bringing together very diverse interests who can find lots to disagree about, but leave that at the door, come together, and I would say today, for example, the channel, which is about half completed, faces relatively little opposition in the lower Columbia River. You can ask your colleague, Senator Johnson, who's had to live with us for some time, but certainly when I go to Astoria, my old hometown, I don't find myself hung in effigy any longer, and I think that I would give a great deal of the credit to this program for identifying those things on which all of us can agree about issues in the lower Columbia. I think that it is well poised there at Portland State. The academic resources that are available to it as a result of its location really make a big difference. It is a modest sum of money, although I know certainly the pressure you're under. And this same model has been used in any number of different challenges around the state. So this is but one. It's the one that I'm familiar with. And just wanted to come down and have a chance to share that with you. It's practical, it's real, it's everyday, and it has been a very positive asset for Oregon.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Wyatt. We appreciate you coming down today, this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so Zach Wilmarth, Drew Bramer, Mike Olson, and then on deck we have Courtney Moore, Stephanie McCoy, and Madeline Wigan. And we've got 18 minutes, 9 students, plus 2 more people. So you do the math. If somebody said something, you don't need to repeat it. Who's first?
Let me go first.
Okay. Make sure to say your names.
Okay, so my name's Drew Bramer. I'm from Southern Oregon University, and I've carpooled here all the way down from Ashland with a bunch of students, so we're excited about, you know, representing higher education. So I'm just here just to say that I'm concerned about the funding for higher education. I think right now we're in a bad state, especially at Southern Oregon University. There's been lots of cuts at our university, and I personally have experienced them. I'm a French-Spanish major, and the French program was threatened to be cut from our university, and luckily we were able to organize students and write letters, and it's there, but unfortunately the honors program, which is a program I was, you know, heavily involved in, is being cut from our university, and you know, the director is being fired because there's just not the money to pay for her position. And this director for me is like a role model. Ever since my freshman year, so and I learned a lot in the honors program, but unfortunately there just isn't the money to support it right now at our university, so I think that's really unfortunate. And I guess right now at Southern Oregon University, we're facing a time where we're just trying to scramble, like students and teachers and everyone at the university is trying to scramble for money to put together and keep our university intact. I'm part of a budget committee on campus, and we deal with the budgets in the student union. And every time we look at a budget, one of the things we always have to ask ourselves is, will this generate revenue for us? I mean, what's the best way to bring in more money? And we're not necessarily looking at what's the best for the students, what's the best, you know, we're supposed to be spending money on the students, but we're at the situation where we're really asking ourselves, how can we get the most money? Because we're at that point. So, you know, I think, you know, you could argue that a student's job should be, you know, to have an education, to study, but I guess right now we're just at a point where we're all trying to just scramble for money. In our criminology department, the building is falling apart, and, like, pieces of the ceiling are literally falling on people's heads. So, like, the criminology students got together, and they've been holding bake sales, you know, to help for the building. So we're at a point like that, and I think it's really unfortunate. And I'd like to see more money be coming to our school, and I think it could really help us out. And I guess if we don't fund education, especially regional universities and Oregon in general, I'm just really afraid about the dire unintended consequences of not doing so. And I think education should be a priority in Oregon, and if there's any money left over, I think that we should spend and put it together for a university, because I think education should be a top priority. So, yeah, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Bramer.
Thanks for letting me talk.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Chuck Galizio and members of the committee. My name is Zach Wilmar, and I'm a student at Oregon State University, and I'm here to testify in support of the governor's recommended budget for the OUS system. Now, attending university for me was never a question when I graduated the guy in high school, and my parents, even if they couldn't fully afford my education, they knew that it was vital that I get a college degree. Now, with help from my mother, I mailed scholarship application after application, and towards the end of my senior year of high school, I realized that with the scholarships that I received, the loans that I was able to take out, and then working full-time over the summer, I was going to be able to attend Oregon State University in the fall. Now, as fall term actually came to an end, because of the scholarships that I received, two of my federal loans were canceled, and I was forced to repay what I used for tuition in the fall. Now, to actually pay back those two loans, I was forced to take out even more loans. Now, with the money I earned over this summer and the loans, I was fully able to pay for college this year, but next year I'm facing up to a $5,000 shortfall just from scholarships that I received as one time for a freshman. Now, my summer job is almost double the minimum wage at a local mill in Union County, and it's the highest paying job that I can possibly get. If making that much money in the summer isn't enough, I don't know what can be. Now, with the limited help the university's given me in the form of a diversity scholarship that's $1,800, it's looking more and more like that debt is going to be my ticket to school in the fall. Now, Oregon State University was an easy decision for me because of the quality of the health care programs within the school. Coming from a rural community where shortages of healthcare professionals are expected in the coming years, that made the decision even easier for me. Now, throughout the year, I've tried to find that specific health field career that I wanted to pursue. But because of the small class offerings for exploratory career courses, I haven't even been able to narrow down my choices. In one class, an introduction to allied health careers is only offered twice a year. And every time I've tried to register, the class seats have been full even before I started. Now, I even emailed the professor one time, and her response was that there are not enough physical seats in the classroom for me. Now, 3 days later, I looked back online, and 15 students had been added to the class without me even knowing, and they didn't even show up online that they had been added. Now, perhaps in the fall, I'm going to be able to get in some of these classes, but that's not going to help me right now. As of right now, I am taking a basic chemistry series for my pre-physical therapy major, But if I want to pursue medicine or dentistry, I'm going to have to take more advanced chemistry series. And having to take that more advanced chemistry is not going to be good for me. I'm going to put in an extra year of school because those classes have to be taken in sequence. And as a result of that, I'm leaning more and more towards physical therapy, merely because my school will be shortened and my debt will be a lot less. Thinking about debt is not the right way for young students like me to be choosing a career. Not only does this hamper Oregon economically, but this isn't helping the quality of life for any Oregonians, let alone the ones in the rural communities like my hometown of LaGrande. In closing, I urge you to support the governor's recommended budget, which is $35 million above the co-chair's budget. But if there's any extra money left over, fix us first. Reinvest in college students' education so that the diploma earned in high school is merely a stepping stone to college and a brighter future rather than a future of increased debt and limited class offerings.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmer. Mr. Olson?
All right.
Mr. Olson?
Yeah. Well, Chair Galizio, members of the committee, my name is Michael Olson, and I am the current student body president at OSU for another couple weeks. And I sit before you on behalf of the OSU students and the many students across the state. Today you have over 100 students here at the Capitol watching in the overflow room. Came all the way from Southern Oregon to make sure that they showed you that they need your support in the higher education budget. And this is also for those students from the past who have seen the large increases in tuition over the last 15 years. It's for the current students, and it's for the future of Oregon and all the students in K through 12 right now that are looking to have their degree count for something, their high school diploma, as they look to move on to higher education. And you've heard us over the year talk about key phrases of make Oregon stronger, stop balancing the budgets on the back of students, and really enough is enough. I'm tired of trying to explain to people why they hear about the support they have here in Salem of higher education, yet never seeing that current investment. And while I might be optimistic and hopeful that all of you can really step up and find funding for higher education, I think a lot of people are starting to lose faith. Cuts are currently being made across the board at every level, especially at OSU, Southern Oregon. And last term, as a student body, we were forced to make decisions on what programs we did want to keep and what programs we didn't want to keep. And in the end, the students of Oregon State University decided that it was extremely imperative to maintain all the programs we had. That's classes, that's enrollment, that's our student services at OSU. And just for example, our student senates voted as they were told that our counseling and psychological services program, the university funding was going to be cut potentially for next year. We thought it was imperative to maintain full level of services for CAFS. And I think with recent events, we are seeing more and more the importance of programs like that on our universities. And so we as students stepped up and we fully funded it ourselves. In addition, we were told about potential $1 million cuts in our student affairs department, which funds most of our services. And we look to approve a $5 fee for all students to fill this gap. And overall, when you hear me say that we decided to do this, it's a little misleading because in no way did we really have a choice, and there was really no appropriate options for our student body. The real decision was really made for us by the legislators' budget in 2005. And it's not fair for students, and in my mind, it's unacceptable for this to be happening on our campuses. We as students shouldn't be deciding whether we fund our counseling and psychological services or any other program similar to that. Some of you appreciate hearing these personal testimonies and of the increasing difficulties of access and affordability to quality education, and others of you really just want hard numbers. And I'm here to tell you that we will continue to tell our stories and we will continue to provide you those numbers, but I also know that you already know these stories and you already know these numbers. And to So I leave it up to you to take the first step in supporting our failing education system, because as my colleague Jared Axelrod from the U of O said in one of his testimonies to the Ways and Means Roadshow, the only direction we seem to be going is from an F to an F minus. And so invest in higher education and help Oregon meet a passing grade, as well as you make your tough decisions and creatively and find ways to find funding for all the programs. Make sure you fix higher education first.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it very much. Thank you. All right. Courtney Morse, Tiffany McCoy, Madeline Wigan, and on deck, Jen Yedas, Laura Rost, and Jesse, I think it's Button. Buffton. Sorry. FRT.
Chair Galizio, members of the committee, my name is Madeline Wigan and I'm a senior at the University of Oregon. I'm here today to ask you to support students retaining the interest on tuition to offset budget shortfalls and reinvest in neglected areas such as student services. In my own college career, I have been fortunate enough to be supported and encouraged by the guidance of my family and friends. While their help is invaluable, I couldn't have done it without the student services I received. Services such as tutoring and career advising, specifically in my major, have been a lifesaver, or at least a grade saver. When I needed advice and information about potential career paths in my chosen field of accounting, I've gone to my department advisor. When I've needed help figuring out debits and credits, I've been able to find it in my department's academic services office. These services should not be left out of the equation of a successful university in the state of Oregon, since they increase retention and graduation rates. Students my age are graduating from college at a lower rate than our parents' generation, while the necessity of a college degree and obtaining a job continues to rise. Student services are essential to higher education. Services such as academic advising and tutoring have been proven to reach these goals. Throughout Oregon, we've seen cuts in student services in order to spare cuts in the classroom. Some students may not complete college without these crucial student services. A good friend of mine recently decided to put her education on hold beginning this term. She's paying for school without any family assistance, and in order to pay her bills, she had to work nearly full-time. Balancing work with school had grown too difficult. When telling me of her decision, she said that without any guidance from her family and the limited advice she'd gotten from advisors and instructors in her department, she felt it was not wise to continue in her education at this time. Her department lacks the strong advising office and academic services that have been so essential to my education. My friend is uncertain what career path she wants to take and even what options were available to graduates in her field. There are many students just like her who are motivated, independent individuals. Without adequate support services, many of these students will have to delay their education, perhaps indefinitely. As difficult as it is to watch my friend leave college behind, it is more difficult to accept the fact that this issue is affecting thousands of students. In fact, I think it's unacceptable. We know that providing support services would reduce the number of students who find themselves painted into a corner in their pursuit of higher education. Getting to college is an achievement in itself. These efforts should not go unrecognized. Advising and academic services should be available so that students are encouraged to stick with their education and supported in doing so. The interest that is earned off of tuition for student services will benefit the most vulnerable students, such as low-income and first-generation Oregonians. In turn, the state will benefit from this investment as these students are more likely to graduate, thus contributing more in taxes while being less likely to use state services. By retaining this funding in our schools, support for these services should be provided off of student dollars. Providing educational resources is essential to retaining students. It is important that this reinvestment be made before we see a greater decline in enrollment in our universities in the state. The Oregon University system needs the investment of the governor's budget to ensure that we can rebuild and reinvest in our state's universities. In addition, I urge you to support students retaining the interest on tuition so that we can reinvest in neglected areas such as student services. And I thank you for hearing me on behalf of myself, all the students I go to school with, and everyone like my friend who's working instead of going to school today.
Thank you, Ms. Wigan. Ms. Morse, I feel like you're one of my classes.
I know.
You and Ms. McCoy, I keep seeing you. It's great.
Yes. Well, Chair, members of the committee, I thank you again for this opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Courtney Morrison, the student body president at Portland State. And I do think this would be one of the last opportunities I have to testify, as I will be done in a couple weeks. So I'm just going to be honest with you, and I think that the decision you have to make is very clear. I think it's clear by the stack of testimony. It's clear from the student testimony. It's clear from the students who hopped on the bus today. It's clear from the students in the overflow room. And if you were to spend any day on campus asking any professor, faculty, or administrator if we need funding for our education, they'd probably laugh and tell you that the decision is clear. I want to tell you about a decision that's not clear, and that's my own decision. You may have heard it a couple times. Unfortunately, I'm $30,000 in debt, and it's because my parents shortly filed bankruptcy after the divorce, and I have no one to co-sign on a loan. Sallie Mae is the only organization that will give me any funds. And every summer, I cross my fingers, I head to the counselor's office, and I have to decide if I'm going to go to PSU next year. And I know I've testified many times, but I honestly can't look you in the face today and tell you whether I'll be attending school next year. I remember my last testimony at Jefferson High School, I laughed, and a couple of people said we thought about law school, and I kind of laughed if I could afford it. If my dreams were to come true, I'd be a social justice lawyer where I could represent for underrepresented communities and help destroy some of these roadblocks that I've had to face. What it means at Portland State University, we have room in our budget office that Lincoln Hall will actually shut down. This is our theater, arts, and performing center, a very old, ancient, beautiful building. I know you've toured it, Representative Galizio, and it's just falling apart. We need funds to renovate this building, and I don't know where those students will go. It's hard to tell the music and theater arts students that the state legislature is out of touch. We're 46th in the nation. I'm just shocked that they would be so out of touch. If you spend a minute on campus, you would see that we need these funds for Lincoln Hall. If you spend a minute in our labs and science building too, you would know that we're limiting bright young minds by not funding the labs and the technology that we need. Biology is one of the most popular programs at Portland State right now. In addition, I hear estimates from the Oregon University system that tuition could increase by as much as 18% over the next 2 years. And you tell this to students out in the park box. We get signatures. We get testimony. We tell this to students, and they're just shocked. And so what we try to do is come down to Salem and tell you these stories. And I think the decision is clear. I'm not sure about my decisions. These decisions are hard for hundreds of thousands of students, and I only have 2 minutes to represent their voices with you today. And so I ask you to take these testimonies very seriously. Know that behind us are hundreds of thousands of students asking the Oregon legislature to get in touch with what Oregon values are, to value education, and fund the governor's recommended budget. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tiffany McCoy. I currently serve as the director of State and Federal Affairs for the student government at Western Oregon University. I also currently serve as a representative on the Oregon Student Association Board. I'm here today to address my concerns with the co-chair's budget and what it means for regional universities. Regional universities play a critical role in the Oregon university system. Without regional universities, students will be forced to travel across the state and attend higher-cost universities elsewhere. I'm from Pendleton, Oregon. What attracted me to Western Oregon was its size and its cost. I initially wanted to enroll at the University of Oregon, but I decided to attend Western because it was more affordable and accessible for me. I will be looking at graduating with around $23,000 in debt, where that could have potentially been near $40,000 in debt had I attended the University of Oregon. It is unacceptable for me to graduate $23,000 in debt as the affordable option. This budget does nothing to alleviate this burden. Oregon's university is currently ranked 46th in the nation in spending per university student. Tuition has risen 50% in the past 5 years. This budget only continues this trend and continues to price students out of education. We must fully fund the $9 million ask for regional support. My campus has no more room to trim around the edges. Student services are being cut, faculty salaries are dwindling, classes are being canceled. In 10 years, will my degree mean anything if Western has to close its doors because of a lack of funding from the state? In reaction to years of disinvestment to higher education, my institution has implemented a new tuition model. We can no longer depend on the state for funding. Next year alone, tuition will raise for the incoming freshmen by 16% and stay level for the next 4 years. My university is calling this the tuition promise. I don't believe this is a promise. I feel this is a way for my university to increase revenue again off the backs of students. There is a lack of state support for Western Oregon University. There is a lack of state support for the Oregon University system. We are coming out of a recession. Why are we not increasing regional support when we are facing a $2 billion increase in the general fund? Why are we not buying down tuition? Why are we not increasing faculty support and financial aid? Why are we not making the university system more accessible? You have an opportunity to support regional students in Oregon by fully funding the governor's recommended budget. This is your opportunity to make college more accessible to those students across Oregon who want to pursue a degree. We are on the verge of retiring one of the largest workforces in Oregon. We must have an educated citizen ready to take their place. This is not a time for a tough love budget for Oregon's university systems. As legislators, you have the opportunity to keep Oregon's future alive. I strongly urge you to fund the $9 million ask for regional universities and keep rural Oregonians in college. Thank you.
Thank you, all three. Appreciate it. All right, Jen Vieras, Laura Rost, and Jesse
Bufton.
It's an F, not a T, right?
It is indeed.
Okay, sorry. Looked like a T.
I get it wrong. Yes.
Hi, my name is Laura Ross. I'm a senior in environmental studies at Southern Oregon University, and I'm here just to encourage you to fully fund the governor's budget. I represent the Environmental Resource Center at SOU. We run three programs that are free for the students. We supply all sorts of neat things to the campus. We have a free organic garden, a free bike program. We teach kids how to fix their own bikes, and we do recycling for all the non-office academic buildings. I've been fortunate enough in the 4 years I've been a student to only work three of those years, and this year I've only had to work 15 hours a week, and I feel very, very lucky. Basically, I mean, it's great to be able to say that I only work 15 hours a week, but a lot of people, I mean, last year I was working 35 hours a week some weeks, working until 3 in the morning dishwashing, and this year I've been taking a break. I'm in five organizations. I lead three of them on campus, and I just want you to realize that investing in higher education is exponentially an investment. By having the resources to run all these extracurricular activities like ECOS, our Environmental Resource Center, we basically are on staff, sitting around SOU, thinking of ways to improve the campus. We are looking at ways we can increase efficiency, conservation, and we're also pursuing green tags. Unfortunately, we have to ask students to pay for those green tags. I'm leading that campaign. And I just want you to realize that if you give us the opportunity, we can make the campuses stronger. If we have the funding, we can practice our careers on campus and improve things. Being forced to work as a dishwasher is not the best use of my skills. If I could have anything, I'd love to see more resources for extracurricular activities, because that's how you build your resume. I mean, it's nothing just to have a degree anymore. That's not going to get me very far. So basically, with my Environmental Resource Center, we are a practice nonprofit. We have generally two directors each year, and for 1 or 2 years, we practice how to manage staff. We have seven staff. We get to practice public speaking. We deal with many different issues on campus, and we do a lot of education campaigns for the campus and community. And our community garden creates relationships with community members, alumni, and students. So with proper funding, we can really bring a lot to the table, especially in a region like Southern Oregon, and we really need access to proper funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Chair Galizio, members of the committee, thank you so much for hearing my testimony this afternoon. My name is Jennifer Yettis, and I'm a junior at the University of Oregon. I'm here as a representative of the Oregon Students of Color Coalition and affiliate board of the Oregon Student Association. This year's proposed budget by the co-chairs is detrimental to the access and recruitment and retention of students of color in the state of Oregon. This cut will not only discourage students of color from attending higher education by its cuts to programs like Aspire and other funding, but will also decrease the accessibility to recruitment and retention programs that the universities are able to have. Currently, students of color are attending college at a lower rate than their white counterparts, and this number will only plummet as a result of this budget. There are plenty of students in this university system who are first-generation students who had to go through the application process by themselves, through the financial aid process by themselves, hoping that they were filling out their correct forms. However, programs like Aspire would not only benefit students of color, but also first-generation students across the state. I know firsthand that filling out applications and understanding an unknown process to my family and my peers was overwhelming and at times made me think twice about how much I wanted to attend higher education. Due to the low priorities of higher education this next year, I'll be forced to take more classes per term in order to graduate at a quicker rate so that when tuition goes up, I don't end up in more debt. I'm currently looking at accumulating over $20,000 worth of debt, and my dreams of being an economic studies and Spanish major have come to a halt. The debt that I am solely responsible for paying off will hinder my ability to work for a nonprofit organization such as the Oregon Student Association as I previously wanted to. This inability to work where I would like to is a direct decay of the societal norms that when you go to college, you're allowed to choose your job. This is a huge problem that students are facing. Currently, we are blocking out some of Oregon's best and brightest students and their opportunity of higher education because of a lack of support and the increased tuition. Students across the state know that 18% is the possibility of the amount that tuition will rise in the next 2 years. And additionally, students of color are seeing student services are the first things to be cut. Student services like the Office of Multicultural Academic Support Office that I spend hours in, that provide services like academic advising, financial aid advising that's very specific and is specialized in a way that no one else specializes on campus, and a place that has a recruitment network that is unsurpassed anywhere else on campus. Please help fund the governor's budget. Please make higher education your priority and help recruit and retain students of color, one of the biggest growing populations in this state, and make sure that students are able to attend college. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hughes.
I'd like to thank you, Chair Galizo, and the members of the committee for allowing me to testify today, giving my experiences in the Oregon University system, how they relate to the OUS budget. My name's Jesse Bofton. Don't worry about the name. Happens all the time. And I'm speaking to you as a member of the Oregon Student Association, representing over 100,000 students at universities and community colleges across the state of Oregon. More importantly, I'm here today as Vice President of Portland State University, and I'm here on behalf of the 24,998 or so other students who could not be here to testify today. In recent years, OUS funding has been inadequate, and as a result of the inadequate funding from the state, the cost of the OUS system is passed on to students. Currently, I have a student debt load of about $14,000. That will be over $20,000 by the time I graduate. It pales in comparison to some of the people that I go to school with every day, but to me, it's still a lot of money. Even that amount is not enough. I can only take 12 credits a term because of the financial aid I receive, which is a bare minimum full-time student at Portland State University. With 12 credits a term, I will be in school for at least 5 years. Now, with the proposed co-chair's budget, OUS sustained tuition could raise up to 18% over the next 2 years. This tuition increase would certainly leave me with the decision to either take out more student loans, get another job, or withdraw from school altogether. I already have to sit down at the beginning of every term and decide which books I think are going to least likely affect my performance in a course because I can't afford to buy all of them and live. Portland State University has seen many similar cuts as schools from other schools in the university system. I'd just like to say that as a student, students like universities in Oregon have already made all the budget cuts and done all the creative budgeting that we can. And I think that the overflowed room and all the testimony we've brought here today is an example of that. I'd just also like to comment really quickly on the capital construction money. Courtney mentioned it. It's really important to us. With our new rec center that's going to be built in hopefully pretty soon, we could actually be looking at minus three buildings if we don't get the capital construction money instead of just minus two, which could also keep students from attending classes that they need, keeping students in longer, perhaps even up to 6 years or longer. So a lot of things people have already said, so I just like to thank you, Chair Glizzo, and the committee for hearing what we have to say, and I hope that my testimony today, along with many others, will compel you to increase funding levels to the governor's recommended budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you, all three.
Thank you. Thank
you. Real quick, just for the record, the rec center part of the PCAT building is a F bond and actually will be funded under the co-chair's budget.
I was just pointing out that there will be one less building if that's worth the classroom size.
Touché. Okay, last two more people. Professor Carson, and I'm hoping is it Mina?
It is.
And Duncan Wise, President of Oregon Business Council. Okay.
Hi, I know you're at the end of your day, and thanks for hanging in there. I'm delighted to be here, although not, of course, for the main reasons why we're here. I'm Mina Carson. I'm Associate Professor of History at Oregon State University, and I'm President of the Interinstitutional Faculty Senate. So it's my job in that office to try to represent the perspective of the combined faculties of the Oregon University system. I think the students are incredible. I don't think I really have to talk very much because they've said most of what we need to say to you. I have a couple of points, and I will get you my written testimony. One point is that our national competitiveness and the national competitiveness of our faculties does matter, and it matters a lot. Another point is that we're rapidly moving across the line from extreme efficiency to starvation in our universities in terms of the kinds of administrative cost cutting that we've seen that has moved us into irrationality in the way that we run our affairs. My third point is what the students have suggested and others, and that is that higher education is an investment and not a cost, and that we will be colonized by individuals and corporations from outside the state if we cannot produce our own workforce, if we cannot graduate well-educated BAs, MAs, and PhDs. You've heard from these students. You know what incredible students we have. We as faculty members, I have to say, have given a lot over the last 20 years to keeping the system going. And I don't know how to explain that except that our students inspire us to do so. I have a colleague in Russian history who tells me that after he read the National Salary Report compiled by the American Historical Association, he realized that he'd been making a $20,000 annual contribution to Oregon higher education without benefit of a tax credit. He's a full professor. He was hired at OSU in 1985. He's published three substantial and well-regarded books, and he's been rewarded with a salary that's equivalent to the national average for an associate professor in rank for 3 or 4 years. The reason that he is still in Oregon, and as I said, I'm going to give you my written testimony, so I'm going to stop here. The reason he's still in Oregon is he's a working class kid. He went through public schools. He feels strong. He's the biggest cynic you're ever going to meet, but he stays here because he loves public education. So there's many stories like this, but we're desperate, and we need funding. And I know you guys are friends of higher education. I just want to speak for the faculty and for the system and say somehow we've got to creatively fund this system, because it's a great system, but we're starving. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Professor Carson.
Mr. Wise.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Duncan Wise. I'm the president of the Oregon Business Council. I believe your last presenter today, so I will be very brief. The Oregon Business Council did meet last week, and a number of them expressed concern to me about the budget presented by the co-chairs, and we were quite optimistic by the governor's budget and how he addressed the entire education continuum, and really encourage you to take a careful look at it. And as you do so, you won't be surprised to hear from me what goals you should have in mind. We believe we need an education system that ultimately delivers 40% of the adults with a four-year degree or above, 40% with an associate or technical degree, and another 20% with at least a meaningful high school diploma. That is a major ramping up of the education delivery system in Oregon. If we did it, and if we achieved it, it would serve us extraordinarily well in the 21st century to the tune, we believe, of about $5 billion a year in additional personal income, plus, of course, a citizenry that's more active, engaged in political life and civic life, and a citizenry, frankly, that's been enriched by a quality education. We think those are the fundamental goals that should drive your work and your budget process, and you should take a look at your budget in the end and ask, are you driving towards those goals? We've suggested, I've worked with a number of you during the interim on tools to do that, and as you look at the university and the community college budget, I really encourage you, first of all, to look at access and think about whether you're providing access to every student that needs it. And I think we're in a state where we are willing to create an entitlement for corrections, but do not create an entitlement for those who want to go into the four-year system. And I think we've got to think about that as a goal. I'm on the State Board of Education, deal with K-12. I go out and talk to middle school students and elementary school students, and especially in low-income areas, ask them what their expectations are. And I often hear, I ask them, are you going to go to college? Are your friends going to go to college? And they'll say, well, don't think we can get there. Don't think we can afford it. We need a message in Oregon to any student in the K-12 system that if you meet the standards, high standards we're setting for K-12, you're going to be able to afford a university education or an associate degree. That should be our goal, and what we need to be telling our students. So the access issue is critical. The combination of the support for the schools plus the Oregon Opportunity Grant, put those together, encourage you to think about whether you're driving access. In addition, and I think access is the most fundamentally important issue in the capacity to provide that the services. In addition, as you know, there are a lot of areas of the business community are focused. We see a huge value from the university system for specific areas that connect with the economy. And you've heard about ETIC. Again, we've been with that goal for a long time, since the beginning of doubling the number of engineers, creating a top 25 program. We've got a variety of other occupational areas, including health and other areas. And also, some of the services, and there are a lot of the services, I'm just going to mention two, the university system. The Oregon Solutions, I think you've heard about today. I've been involved in that group. It's doing a wonderful job in connecting with communities and finding projects that really make a difference, and I encourage you to look at that. The Institute for Natural Resources, Representative Morgan, I serve on the advisory committee. I think it's doing a marvelous job of bringing research from OSU, in particular scientific research, to bear on some of our thorny natural resource problems. There are a variety of different specific initiatives that contribute to the economy through higher ed, and I'm touching on a few. But again, I encourage you to recognize the value. And as the students said, and we're all saying, if you invest in higher ed, it's going to grow the economy, it's going to grow incomes, and it's ultimately going to grow the state budget and reduce the prison system costs and the social service costs for those disadvantaged Oregonians. So it's a good investment, and I encourage you to look hard at finding ways to fully invest in this part of the system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. Thanks, Mr. Clarkson. And I want to thank the members of the committee for remaining after the time, and Mr. Sorensen and Mr. Bender, and I especially wanted to thank the students who are extraordinarily articulate and compelling, and thank you for the effort to come down here, and people in this building are listening, so now it's time to deliver, so we'll see you in the next couple of months. So thank you very much, all of you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing, and we are adjourned.